think digital marketing is the future. I think everyone should be doing it. But I think too many people lose sight of it. Well, if it's not converting the right people, you got to do other stuff. I'm a big believer in going old school. And I think this year is a push for us to go back to doing old school stuff.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. My guest today has 5 passports and homes around the world, but has chosen to live in Ireland and believes Ireland might be the best place to live in the next 10 years. This is Andrew Henderson, the founder of Nomad Capitalist. Here's my chat with Andrew. Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish businesses who grew from one idea to become world-class companies, able to compete with the best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to become more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. Visit localenterprise.ie or click the link in the bio below. Okay, you know me. You know I'm massively into my health, fitness, and training. But there's one thing I haven't spoken about before, and that is a product I take every single day. It's a product called Resilience, and it's made by an Irish company called Ethos. What's kind of funny is that every single entrepreneur I meet, that is the one characteristic they have, incredible resilience. So I like that little play on words. It's a multifunctional supplement that supports cognitive function, immunity, which is super important this time of year, energy levels, and it keeps stress at bay. I also love it because it's easy. If you're bringing anything new habit into your life, it has to be easy, and taking Resilience is so simple. I simply mix it in a glass of water every single morning, and I always throw a couple of extra in my gym bag to keep them with me. It's a really tasty blood orange flavor as well. It ticks all the boxes. It has B vitamins, amino acids, vitamin C, and adaptogens like reishi mushroom and ashwagandha. So if you want to try it, I think you should. Go to weareethos.com. And because I like it so much, the guys have given me a discount code. So if you go to weareethos.com, enter Gary Fox at the checkout, you'll get 20% off, which makes taking Resilience about €1 a day, which is an unbelievable price for building some inner resilience. Check out weareethos.com. If you've been listening for a while, you'll know Iconic Offices has been my partner and home in the pod for a long time now. Working and recording in their spaces has helped support the ambitious goals of the pod and, to be honest, really helped it grow. So I partner with them to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, the opportunity to work from Iconic Offices spaces and experience it for yourself, no fees, no catches. Simply visit the Iconic Offices link in the show notes below and enter the code GARY24 and claim your free co-working day pass, or bring the whole team with you and book a day office. Andrew, welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, it's good. Nice to be here.
You are recently arrived, not just to the pod, but to Ireland. What made you move to Ireland?
Well, I guess I've moved to a number of places, and I have homes around the world. You know, I've spent a lot of my time since leaving the U.S. over a decade ago living in some very exotic places. Some I continue to really enjoy spending time in, like Malaysia, and I was just there. Others serve me as part of the growth experience, and I just realized, being from the U.S., I think that there's certain cultural elements that it's nice to have as at least part of your life. Maybe if not full time, but just to have a home somewhere where they have that similar culture, I think, minus some of the negativity about the U.S. I kind of think Ireland is this great, you know, Western country without some of the stuff that people like me don't like about the West anymore. It's kind of a nice balance. And I said that's a kind of balance I'd like to have in my life.
Because it's going to be interesting, because a lot of our audience are in Ireland, and a lot of them want to kind of like move abroad. They want to like move somewhere else. They're sick of Ireland. They're sick of the taxes. Whereas it's interesting to hear you coming in, somebody who's a very successful entrepreneur actually moving to Ireland. Well, apart from, was it mainly the culture that brought you here, or what were the defining factors? Because a lot of people in Ireland are now kind of post-COVID going, I'm going to move to Spain. I'm going to move to the Middle East is a big one. What was the defining factors that brought you here?
Well, I first started visiting Ireland 15 years ago, and I knew people in Ireland that I think gave it a very warm glow, and I saw it from a very nice perspective from the beginning, and I always enjoyed coming here. And I noticed how I am when I'm here. I really started plugging in the last year or two. I'll be 40 later this year. I started plugging into, how does my body feel? I think as entrepreneurs, we fashion ourselves as intellectuals, and everything's about how, you know, what do I think? I started plugging into, how do I feel? And I'll tell you this story. We have a guy who works for us here in Ireland, and he came on a trip with us through some of the places where I've spent time, Serbia and Georgia and Turkey. And he really liked it because his cigarettes are 80% less, and the girls are really pretty, and some of them like him, and all that kind of stuff. But he saw, I forget where we were, but it was just really tense. Like, we're just trying to explain something in 30 seconds, and they just, it's like, no, let's have a conversation. Like, let's take an hour and discuss it. Like, we don't understand, but we could do it this way. It's like, just move that chair over there, move that table over there. And he saw some of the frustration. And I think what I've started to tap into is, how do you feel in your body when you go to some of these places? Malaysia, for example, I was just there. It's a great place, except for the time zone. If you have people who work for you elsewhere, you're up late. That's frustrating. But otherwise, it's a great place unless you need like big stuff done. So like if your air conditioner goes out and you have to get the guys in to replace it, I'd rather do that in Ireland than in Malaysia. Because you just don't understand like who are the good people. Like, you know, you don't understand the culture deeply enough and that kind of stuff. I mean, you go out to eat, you go out to Starbucks, you go to the club, you go to like your favorite bar, you have great, you know, conversations with people about business, about life, whatever. That's beautiful, beautiful people in Malaysia. But when it comes time to some of those frustrations, I think that the feeling in the body is a bit more. And so what I decided was I'm either going to go to somewhere like Dubai, which I think is actually not as good of a deal as Kuala Lumpur. I think Kuala Lumpur is nicer people and just in many ways better. And I'm going to get a staff and I'm going to do what a lot of people there do. Like I looked at buying a car in Malaysia and they're like, are you going to get a driver? I thought, ah, that sounds frustrating. No, you got to have a driver. Or I'm going to go to a place like Ireland and it'll just be a little easier to navigate some of that day-to-day stuff. I think that my desire to leave the US and kind of build this whole nomad capitalist was, it has to be almost a struggle at times. I don't think our clients struggle nearly as much as I do, but my desire to kind of be this extremely authentic nomad capitalist is, it almost has to be a struggle. You have to go to the most exotic places. You have to deal with the most exotic people. And maybe there's been times it's been overcomplicated. And I think that having Ireland as a piece of that removes the complication to some extent.
It's really interesting to hear someone who's, people probably know you as like a finance guy, because everyone has labels, a finance guy or a money guy.
Whereas he doesn't like to pay taxes.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And no, it's funny, we label people. But it's really interesting to hear you say, how does it make me feel in the body? Because it's the last thing you hear people say. Everyone's like, well, tax rate is this and it's that and cost this. But then as you get a little bit older, I think as well, you start to tap into more.
I've always tried to tell the clients, I don't do really much client work myself anymore in our business, but I've tried to be the person who knows what people are in for. And I'm telling people, listen, maybe you don't want to make the most extreme move to start if you're going to actually move to reduce your taxes. Now, if you're from the United States, Mexico is probably a lot similar culture-wise in terms of getting stuff done. The language is different, but the culture is really not that different compared to all the places you can go in the world. You know, Ireland obviously speaks the same language. I would argue places, you know, people from certain places in the US would be better served to move to Dublin than to like Texas or something. The culture is probably similar for them. But, you know, I've spent time in Spain. I spent a month in Valencia. It's not a place I know intimately, but just in the time that I'm there, I think to myself, if I had to live here, I'd be frustrated.
Is that cultural? Is that language? What it would be?
Listen, I could do my best. You know, Trump. I love the Spanish people. I love their spirit. You know, but it's just a different pace. Okay. I'm a guy who moves, and I think that there's probably a lot of entrepreneurs who either have just accepted that and they're totally cool with that, or there's other people like me who, for much of their lives, had people surrounding them like, "Why don't you chill out? Calm down. Like, relax." I'm not a guy who relaxes. I'm always doing something. The minute I have a free moment, what's the next project? You know, it's why we've built Nomad Capitalist. I mean, we're just moving over our database of like 1,500 banks that we work with all around the world. And we can plug in any filter and figure out what's the bank that'll work for you. And we actually know like which banks actually work, not just like, oh, in theory, this bank, like what actually works. So if you are our client, like that's the kind of data we have and all these different things. because I'm restless. So living in a place that where it's like designed for relaxation, living in a place where, what do they say? Like a job is something that you have, not something you do, or vice versa, something like that. I think I've come to the point in life, total respect for that. Just not for me.
Do you think different locations are for different stages in life?
Maybe. Yeah, where was I looking at? I mean, I was in Monaco recently. That seems like a retirement place because if you're running a business, the tax situation isn't really as good as people make it out to be. It's great if you're just like personal, you just have, you sold a business or you're investing, that kind of thing. But it's not as good if you're actively running your business. You know, that could be a retirement place. Where else was I looking? I mean, like Switzerland. I spent a lot of time in Switzerland in 2022, about a month or so. And like, I love Lucerne. I was also in Italy. I love Lake Como. I think I get pretty bored in a place like that. Right? Maybe I'll never get to that point. My father just turned 70. He's pretty active still. He likes to explore. Maybe some of us just aren't cut out for that, but I think perhaps they are, yes. I mean, when I went to Asia, when I started traveling to Asia a lot and then moved there in my late 20s, I still love like watching the kind of next generation of the world kind of like unfold in front of your very eyes. Like I think Asia will continue to be kind of the future of the 21st century, and watching that, watching this ceaseless construction, watching, you know, the middle class develop, like what the upper class develop, is very interesting to me. Is that as interesting when you're 65? You know, we had Jim Rogers at our annual event, Nomad Capitalist Live. I mean, Jim Rogers is, I think, 80 years old. He lives in Singapore, which is the more muted version. I would argue Kuala Lumpur is close enough to Singapore that it's Western enough for somebody. But I guess it depends. I mean, the short answer is it depends on the person. I think if you're more restless, maybe you're never cut out to move to Spain or Greece.
Yeah, your personality has to dictate. I think a lot of people look at it just purely from a taxation point of view and then realize they get there and like, oh, that just doesn't suit my personality.
I think what I did for years, which speaks to people's, perhaps some have made it, listen, I promoted it, I talked about it, but it speaks to people's understanding of my view on taxation is I had a bunch of different places because I am so restless and I find so many things fascinating. I said, yeah, I want to spend some time in Latin America. Okay, where's a country where I can get permanent residence by, let's say, buying a house? Okay, Colombia. Maybe I would have gone to Mexico, but they don't give you permanent residence for buying the house. They don't give you the path to citizenship, you know, just by buying the house. So, okay, Colombia. I'll go there and I get that part of the culture. If you don't spend 183 days in Colombia, they don't tax you. It's a pretty simple tax test, unlike Germany or many European countries. It's just, did you spend the days or not? I don't want to spend that much time in Colombia, but I want to be there. I want to be part of Latin America. I'll do some traveling around the region. I'll, you know, practice my Spanish, whatever. But I also want to be in Asia for the aforementioned reasons. Then I also want to be a little bit in Europe. And, you know, so it's like I constantly traveled around to get the best of these places, to constantly explore, to find new opportunities. And as a result, it's a very tax-efficient way to live if you're someone potentially from Ireland. Find one place where officially you are a taxpayer. Maybe you pay zero or very little. And then you explore. I think that from a stage of life perspective is, yes, again, turning 40 and 9 months from now, I think I'm ready to do a little bit less exploring. I got back here a couple days ago, and I stupidly flew on Qatar, all these Middle Eastern airlines, because it's right dab in the middle. You can't sleep on other flights. I'm still a little jet lagged, and I'm kind of tired of that. But doesn't mean you want to be. Doesn't mean you want to stop being restless.
Yeah, I like that. I think the modern world is leaning towards that. I think a lot of people are now looking towards, just because I live somewhere doesn't mean I have to be there 12 months of the year. I think a lot of people are now looking like kind of like the model you said. And it's not just the backpackers anymore. It's not just the people who are 22 and, oh, I'm going to do a gap year and then life will start. I think I've noticed it a lot, and especially the people I talk to, a lot of them are now quite flexible and quite mobile in how they approach their lives. They might be in Ireland for 6 months, but then it might be 3 months somewhere else and 3 months somewhere else. I think post-COVID now, everyone is, entrepreneurs are doing this beforehand, but I think even people that normal inverted commas jobs are now going, well, I'm going to work remotely for 3 months from Spain for the summer.
That could be an issue for like a company. We're doing a big project on this of like what all those rules are. And if someone goes to work from Spain, what is the tax connection for the company of Spain? So some bigger companies don't allow you to do that. By the way, people have been doing this for a long time. It's just been democratized. I remember a couple of years ago when when Trump was in office, there was some article about his first wife, Ivana Trump, and she lived in New York. And I guess I saw they had this, she had this weird, funky penthouse they just sold off. But she would summer in the south of France, and she would winter in, you know, wherever. But it just become democratized to where people who didn't get divorce settlements or inherit money can now do that as well. I mean, so it's somehow been associated with this kind of, you know, backpacker, to use your word, mentality. And okay, cool. Like, let everybody do it. But there's a lot of very successful entrepreneurs who are just basically doing the, I'm going to summer in the south of France or some equivalent, but, you know, not summering in the old money sense of the word where I don't do anything. I'm just going to go and spend my summer there and I'll do the same thing I do.
That's a really good point, actually. You've just, it's just kind of drawn on me as you were saying, it used to be either two ends of the spectrum. Either you're 22 doing it on no money, or you're fabulously wealthy and at the other end of your life doing it on lots of money. It was people in the middle who didn't have that maybe opportunity or maybe knowledge. Is it a knowledge thing? Why are we now so open to this? Is it technology? Is it knowledge? Is it mindset? What is it?
Well, it's a number of things, I think. I just tell where I'm from in the US. I don't think this is as big of an issue in Ireland, but in the US, Australia, maybe the UK, I think people see their country heading in the wrong direction. I think that's partially due to wage stagnation in some of these places. I mean, prices have gone up. I think maybe people don't know the whole reason. I was just in Malaysia. One of my Singaporean bankers, they hosted a dinner. And I said, confirm something I've been saying for years. You'd much rather have a rich Indonesian than a rich American. She said, hands down, 100%. We don't want rich Americans. They come with a large regulatory burden. And the rich American wants, they think that like, oh, I'm an American. Everyone wants my money. So here's the minimum, 200,000. The Indonesian, the Vietnamese guy, brings in like all of his money. Here's $10 million, no regulatory burden, no IRS to report to. We'd of course, and we understand like he's regional. Like, why does he want to come to Singapore? We understand that. So we want him. And I think that a lot of people in the West don't entirely understand that like people are getting very, very wealthy in a lot of these emerging countries. Maybe the countries themselves, not everyone's getting wealthy. Although even in Africa, you've got a growing number of countries with a decent middle class now. Defined as, I think, you know, $10,000 a year. And so the Western countries are kind of stagnating because there is more competition. People like me, yeah, I, for a few jobs, have found people that are Western better. We are hiring here in Ireland. But for a lot of our stuff, this could be done by someone anywhere. If someone in Argentina is $18,000 a year, why would I pay the person who brings a bigger attitude $80,000 a year? Right? Why would I do that? And so, therefore, there's more competition from, you know, in that regard. I think you're seeing more competitive landscape. I mean, we were talking 50 years ago, no one would move to Singapore. Now, if you're a passive investor, it could cost you as much as $100 million in investments to move to Singapore. I mean, that's like the upper level you have to contribute. You know, I remember watching the movie Entrapment with Catherine Zeta-Jones. It was like in the late 90s. They showed Malaysia. It's like a village, Kuala Lumpur, with these Petronas towers just coming out of nowhere, brand new Petronas towers. I live 10-minute walk from those towers. I don't know how many buildings in the way between me and the towers. There's just so much construction. It's not a village anymore. You wouldn't have lived in Malaysia back then. Now it's extremely livable. I mean, my father came. He's like, this is better than most cities in the United States.
Mm. Is there a global shift happening, Andrew? Like it, what you said there, wage stagnation, you know, it feels like the older traditional powers, the UK, the US, yeah, there does seem to be a waning of that model. Like, where are we going with this?
Well, I don't know as much about the UK. I think the US somewhat overplayed their hand. And we talked a little bit about this where, I mean, at the turn of the century, 8% of the world basically was sanctioned by the United States. Now it's 29%. Basically, one third of the world is in some way sanctioned by the United States. And so those countries, you know, look at what's happened in Asia, whether you like it or not. So those countries are taking more authority. Look at what's happening with countries forming regional blocks. It could be anything from BRICS all the way down to Open Balkan. Mercosur are doing more. More countries are dealing with China. But just so many things are changing where people are saying, well, you know, hey, America First may work for you and you can sanction whoever you like and you can have your own values. But, you know, like we don't want to starve. Like we want to be successful too. And so like, all right, like what's the path to get there? And I think that when you basically are at odds with one third of the world, those countries are taking back some of their own resources. There's business being developed in some of these places. Not all these places will become successful. I mean, you know, Rwanda's talked about in Africa as this kind of potential success story. Will it take 50 years? Will it ever mature? But I think that, you know, when you basically go around dictating to people, what do they say in Africa? They say when the Chinese come, they build a hospital. When the Americans come, they give us a lecture. I mean, you can say, hey, but the lecture's correct, right? But if you're the country in Africa, you're like, listen, like we're just trying to like we don't we're just trying to build our country, right? America first and Rwanda first. Like we're Rwanda first, right? Like who's in line with us, Rwanda first or whatever country first? And I just think this idea of like, well, it is a neocolonialism to go around and tell everyone how to run their affairs. And quite frankly, that's something that I like about Ireland's. I think it's much more neutral and much more minds its own, you know, business. And I think it's probably much more right-minded on this kind of stuff.
How should entrepreneurs be thinking about this? Because obviously most of our listeners are entrepreneurs or business owners. How should they start to think about this now? Because we chatted over coffee and you were saying like a lot of average people should do more. What does that mean?
Well, I think people should be prepared for the world changing. So, I mean, my story is I have five different passports, potentially might work on a couple more. Maybe at some point I'll decide, you know, I should be Irish and that'd be something that I'd be very proud of. But some of the passports are more strategic than others. I like some of the countries. I spend time in some of the countries. Some of them are just strategic, make a donation to the country. Hey, I mean, that's a form of tax and builds the country. And some of those countries, like a St. Lucia, you get a passport, $100,000. They build roads. They build schools. I mean, they really need the $100,000. Dominica, low-income housing. Like, they're actually doing something, unlike where I'm from, where the $100,000 just goes into a black hole. They're building up their country. But, you know, am I in great love with St. Lucia? I think it's a nice country. But I think that people – so anyway, multiple passports, multiple residence permits in other countries, including places like a Malaysia or a UAE, where you'll probably never be a citizen. They don't really naturalize foreigners, but you can have this residence permit forever. Bank accounts all around the world, asset protection structures, companies around the world, employees around the world. And I think that means that, you know, one of the things we're doing in the business Nomad Campus now is we're working with more people from countries we haven't in the past. There's very wealthy people in Vietnam, Brazil, and all points in between that we've worked with, who are actually some of the best clients. And I think that with all those things put together, you never know what could happen in the economy of one country. If you're wholly dependent on the Irish economy or the US economy or whatever, what happens if that goes down? You know, what's your diversification plan? What happens if the banking system in one place goes down? We saw last year, big reminder, some US banks, not good. Now they're saying in the news again, well, we're a little skittish again. I just think you want to be diversified for the downside. At my point in life, I'm relatively focused on protecting the downside. But also on the upside, I mean, the best performing stock in my portfolio in the last year was in Japan. Japanese stocks have done very well on the whole. I'm not invested in high-flying tech stocks. I'm a more defensive investor, but 70-80% returns in a year in some of these Japanese stocks. Like, there's something happening there. After everyone wrote Japan off. I just think that the world is dramatically changing geopolitically. We saw during COVID, some countries, you know, supported their citizens, other countries. I mean, Australia, you couldn't even get into your own country. It's kind of a violation of all the human rights we've been talking about for decades. And I just think you want to have different passports. You want to have different places you can go. You want to have different places where your money lives. You want to be protected. And you want your business to be diversified and not just be selling to one place.
Why would you have five passports?
At a certain point, I suppose, well, I think it's very strategic. I think at a certain point, there's probably some point along the way. You know, my story from the United States, I'm not a big fan. You're not supposed to say that, but I just don't agree with a lot of the politics. I never did since I was a teenager. Didn't really want to be from there. Didn't want to identify with it. Gave up that passport. So not only having multiple passports kind of fills in the gaps in terms of traveling and stuff that a very strong travel U.S. passport gave me, I'd like the ability to live in different places. I'd like to have, you know, who, you know, if bricks becomes the big thing, how do I go and leverage that opportunity to get my children potentially? I could pick which ones my children get. I've said, if you were going to give birth somewhere, I had a girl who works for me. I was not involved with this at all. Didn't know about it until it happened. She gave birth in the U.S. to a child. Now the child's American. The child has that opportunity. I said, 18 years from now, I'd rather be Mexican. I think they're going to really turn things around. It's going to be faster growing. If you already have money, as her husband does, I'd rather have a Mexican child. And if you give birth in Mexico, your child's Mexican. So I look at it as what could happen in the world. What's going to happen in the next 50 years that I'm alive? What's going to happen in my, you know, what's going to be my legacy? And I think to some extent, not liking where I'm from, there was probably some emotional quest for a home. That if you have enough of them, that kind of equals, like, you know, I'm not entirely like these people and they don't entirely see me as one of them, but they're nice to me. And like, okay, that counts as 0.5 or something. And if I get another one, like that counts as 0.3. And like, maybe I can build the home that I never felt I had. I'm not someone who's like, well, I don't want to pay I love the US, but I don't like the tax rates, so I'm going to begrudgingly leave. Like you couldn't pay me to live in the United States. If tax rates were -5%, I would not live in the United States.
Puerto Rico seems to be the thing. It's kind of bubbling up as like all Americans and Irish moving to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot like hard work. As in, they're moving there, beautiful country, but how are they then maintaining their business? How are they then maintaining their life? That's the bit I never understood.
Well, for Americans or for non-Americans?
For Americans, yeah.
I guess technically we talked about once, if you get some U.S. immigration status, could you move to Puerto Rico and get this good tax deal? And I guess the answer is yes. It still comes with the regulatory burden, by the way. That's what scares me more about the U.S. I before I gave up my citizenship, I think 1 year I paid 10 grand and every other year I paid zero legally. I had restrictions. So like I own my original apartment in Kuala Lumpur is owned by a company of mine. Nobody in that company's jurisdiction, when we do an annual audit, understands. No one in Malaysia understands. I said this was done because it was the only way I could buy that property without taking money out of the company and paying 40% tax. So it made sense for U.S. tax. And then there's so many forms to file. I lived in fear. What if I put the wrong number? I spent so – because I want to be compliant. I don't want to get in trouble. I wanted – okay, I may not agree with the rules, but I'm going to follow them. And it was just so much compliance. So you still have that if you live in the U.S., including in Puerto Rico. If you're a U.S. person, you still have to report your foreign companies and all that kind of stuff. I think Puerto Rico, it's a place – we help people move to Puerto Rico. My personal thing was when I left the U.S., I was single. I didn't imagine myself being with someone who's American. And therefore, I realized I'd have to involve whomever I was with going through a very arduous U.S. immigration process. If they're Irish, they can come and visit, but how often? And if they're, God forbid, they're from, you know, some country that needs a visa, that'll be really hard. You basically have to get engaged to bring them in. And God forbid they're Russian or something, you know, like they'll never get in.
Yeah.
So I kind of looked at it from that personal perspective. I mean, if you're married, go down to Puerto Rico. I also think the issue is a lot of people ask, how little time can I spend in Puerto Rico? I think that's the wrong question. The answer should be, where can I go that I don't want to leave?
Yeah.
People say when you're, you know, people say, oh, you're just running from something. There are things about the U.S. I didn't like. I don't really plug into that stuff anymore. It's like, where do I want to be? Where do I want to run to?
I think that's a better way of looking at life, isn't it?
I think trying to get out of the U.S. tax system by spending the minimum amount of time living in Puerto Rico where nothing works is less than optimal.
From a business point of view, for entrepreneurs listening, where do you think where's the new American dream, right? We've talked about America, it's not what it was. Where should business people, Irish entrepreneurs, UK entrepreneurs, where should they now be looking as the land of opportunity?
Well, there's two things. I mean, 50 years ago, Singapore was this kind of place that came up and they had a number of advantages, geographically, what have you. That, maybe to a lesser extent, South Korea was kind of a success story of that generation. I've said for years, you're going to see much more niche success stories. Some country wants to be number one in AI. If you're not in AI, it may not be as relevant to you. This idea that there's going to be some big overarching place out of so many places. I mean, when I was born in 1984, US was the best place to be born. West Germany was number two. How many countries would like even be on that list of like you'd want to be born in 1984, like 10 or 20? Like, really, how many places would you want to be born? Now, it's like probably 50 or 60 or 70. So it's like, but by nature, the pie is bigger, no doubt, but it's also being carved up a lot more ways. So I don't think there's going to be one great place. I also think that to me, it's about the individual. Listen, if you go to Serbia, it's harder to find networking opportunities with rich people. I've never been a huge networker. I tend to keep to myself. I keep a small circle. So that worked for me. If you think that, you know, being in New York gives you networking opportunities, then you want to be in Singapore, Hong Kong, London, Dubai, whatever else. You know, I think with the bit, I mean, to me, it's diversification. Where your business lives and where you live should be different. So Dublin or Kuala Lumpur is a place to live. Dublin, you probably have more high-level networking, unless you speak Chinese or something. Malaysians speak English, but all the business, I mean, is maybe done in local language. But I would look at things for what each part brings me. I can, you know, am I moving all my assets to Ireland for banking? No, the banking system is slow. It's inefficient. There's like, what, 3 banks here, Revolut. I'm not putting millions of euros in Revolut. Like, keep your money somewhere else. Like, I think Singapore is probably the best place in the world for transactional, affordable, zippy banking. I think, you know, the places where I live, I mean, Dublin, Kuala Lumpur, those are very good places. For more adventure, I think a place like a Tbilisi, Georgia, I mean, there's been opportunity there. People who have been there have done very well. I think, you know, Colombia will be more of a success story. Obviously, Latin America comes with some of the ebbs and flows of kind of the left-wing politics. I don't know where the number one place is going to be. So I want to be diversified in different places. I mean, I've had investments in Indonesia that have done very well, India that have done very well. I don't want to live in India. I like visiting India, but I don't want to live in India. But I think that's going to be a very big success story. I think Indonesia is going to be a big success story. Nigeria, the stock market's up 40% in the last month. I mean, I think there could be a more tenuous on that, but I think that could be a success story. I don't want to live in those places. And again, I kind of thought, okay, well, I'll live in Kuala Lumpur, and that's a little bit more Western friendly, and then I'll check out Cambodia. That's been very successful for me. I've got a friend who has a very successful property fund there, and they've got a great, you know, growth pattern. So I look at it kind of the global citizen sandwich, as I call it. The top part is, where's your money? Where are your assets? That's a place where they're just good at money, good at managing assets. The bottom part is, where am I investing that's fast growth? The Cambodias, the Nigerias, the Indonesias, the Indias. I guess I've had some stuff in Brazil that has done well. Again, I'm more tenuous on that. And then in the middle is, where do I live? That's kind of in the beautiful middle. So in Asia, Singapore is where you put your money. I don't think if you can live anywhere, you'd pay to live in Singapore. There's a 60% tax on non-residents buying property. You buy a $10 million apartment, you pay $6 million in tax. Wow. It's gone. Kuala Lumpur, I got a house here. I mean, it's 1/7 the price for the same space. Beautiful place, nice people, good place to live, tax friendly if you live there full time. And then, you know, Malaysian stock market doesn't move that much. Real estate market, it's more of a lifestyle purchase, it's not going up. I'm investing in Cambodia. I think Bangladesh and Nepal are new places. So I don't know if there's some new dream where you go one place and it's just like all my problems are solved. And I think that when my parents talked about leaving the U.S. in the mid-90s, the idea was, let's go to New Zealand and just move everything there and start over. They were successful, but they're like, my dad thought the country was going the wrong direction. He ultimately didn't move. But that isn't how you should do it today. Like, pick what's best about each place. Doesn't mean you can't have feelings towards some of the places, but like, if you're investing, you should invest for investment's sake. Like, don't just like, well, I like the country, so to be patriotic, I'm going to make no returns. Like, if you're a Malaysian, even a Singaporean, I've got a lot of investments in Singapore because it's very tax friendly. No dividend tax, no capital gains tax. So I don't really pay any, you know, tax-free income. Singaporeans are like, we'll happily pay the 30% U.S. tax because we want more growth. We'll put on the dividend yield, we'll pay the 30%, because it's, you know, they want that kind of growth. They're not like, well, we have to invest in Singapore law because we're patriotic. They're like, we love Singapore, but like, it's not the best deal for our money.
You know? I think that's really interesting, and that's probably a superb insight for people listening, is that it might just be one place anymore. Those days might be over. Like, the golden
there's
era.
So many places.
Yeah. And even to hear you just explain that, because it's the first time I've heard someone coherently put meat on that, because you hear a lot of people, there's a lot of noise in the world, and you hear a lot of people say a lot of contradictory things. And like we talked about over coffee, generally people have a reason that they're promoting someplace, it's commission or whatever it is. You're right. The first person to be able to coherently put it in, going, maybe it isn't one, all your eggs in one basket. Is it a psychology thing, Andrew? Is it like people become rooted in that? You said something fascinating there, where your business lives, you shouldn't live. Is it a psychology thing that people just bring everything together? Like, is it a human thing to bring all your stuff physically and emotionally together into one place?
I'm not so convinced. I think it's what people have always done. And listen, if you run a coffee shop in Ireland, probably the best place to have your company is in Ireland. I mean, you're not hiring people to run your coffee shop. I mean, maybe the social media guy or something should be somewhere offshore if you have like a full-time social media need. But I mean, I happen to think like people should be looking at businesses that can run anywhere. And, you know, I just think that people are used to, you know, where I'm from, the US, you set up an LLC, and you focus on domestic, you know, tax minimization. I read all these articles all the time. Someone sends me like 7 ways to reduce your taxes. Like, use your charitable deduction. Like, I give to charity. People are like, oh, he's looking for the tax deduction. There's no tax deduction. I don't. when your tax rate is low or zero, like, you just have to do it because you want. I think people are just used to a certain way of doing it. It's very hard to change. Like, one of the things that I've loved about living in all these different countries, including very exotic ones, is it creates a friction in your life that forces you to become more self-aware about yourself, because you're no longer really that similar to the people that are around you. And it kind of brings to the surface things that you believe. And I think for me, I've just kind of realized, like, I'm probably different than most people in the sense, like, most people just like, hey, I like this one country, or that's where I'm from. Like, that's how it should be done. Like, I'm afraid of going somewhere else. Like, don't you lose all your money if you put it in a Singaporean bank? And I think the hardest thing for me in my business is I love spending 100 hours a week, like, deep diving on how can the Rwandan president grant citizenship to investors, or, you know, Belize companies are trash, but like, what are the best banks in like mid-level jurisdictions that will take them for people who have, you know, whatever. Like, I love geeking at that. And I sometimes wonder whether there's really enough commercial interest to justify that. Like, I enjoy it, but is there enough commercial interest? Like, I could be out spending my 100 hours a week, you know, building a coffee bean distribution company, and maybe that would become a bigger venture. Like, maybe that's what stops me from being, we talked about, you know, Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk. Like, I spend too much time on stuff. There's not enough commercial interest. How many people want to go and invest in Rwanda? They want to go invest in Rwanda once it is the next Singapore, not once it's talked about as maybe one day it could be. And so they're not going to go and like invest because they can get this weird passport. Like, I don't understand. What would I do with that? Like, yes, they on some surface level understand that during the pandemic, the U.S. passport had as much visa-free travel as the Rwandan passport, but like, oh, that's over now. Like, it's, the U.S. is still the best. I just think people are, Westerners in particular, and this is why I've loved the exotic places. You go outside the West, people don't trust their government, and they almost minimize their country too much. I met a Nicaraguan guy who said, our passport's trash. It's actually one of the best passports. I mean, it's not one of the best passports, but it's a pretty good passport for getting around the world. There's one country he can't go to without getting a visa, and it's hard to get a visa, and that's the United States. Therefore, it's trash. If you're a successful person, and particularly if you're not from the United States, I mean, if I told you you could never go to the United States again, would your life be over? Most people, it wouldn't. You could be, if it came down to Ireland is doing something terrible, and you have this Nicaraguan passport, and you can't be Irish anymore, your life wouldn't be that bad if you're living in Dubai or Kuala Lumpur or going anywhere except for the United States. And I think that's hard for people to understand, because they've been told, like, no, but the Nicaraguans, they're flooding our southern border. They all want to come here. Yeah, not the rich ones.
What about Europe? We talked a little bit over coffee about European destinations. I think Irish people, if they are going to leave, they generally look towards Europe.
Sure.
You know, Spain, Portugal, Cyprus, Malta. Like, what's happening there right now?
Well, so the benefit of a country like an Ireland for a foreigner is a more flexible tax system that an Irish person can't necessarily avail themselves of. I think people look at kind of these similar non-dom tax friendly systems and perhaps overlook like Italy. They made some changes on the lower end. They still have a lump sum tax, 100,000 euros, 125 if you're married, I believe. Greece has a similar system, can go even lower. Obviously, Switzerland has that system.
When you say that, what does that mean? Like 125 tax? Well, you pay to go there once and...
If you're a new resident there, including if you're a citizen of the country and you're just coming back after years of being away, you pay that as a lump sum and they just leave you alone. It kind of is in line with like, hey, you have to pay for the schools and the firefighters mm-hmm. and the stuff that makes society run. You know, I by the way, perfectly happy to do that. Like, I think that's not a bad thing to do is pay for that stuff. What I kind of get bothered is, hey, you made $10 million. You should pay $6 million. Like, that's more than my share of like, roads and bridges and schools. Like, you know, like, so Italy said, hey, listen, almost nobody here, most people don't pay 100,000 euros. If you pay 100,000 euros, you can come and make 100 million euros. And we don't care. Just pay us our 100,000. Like, that's your contribution. That's what a lump sum system is.
Okay. So if an Irish person was going to Italy, they pay 125 and then they can...
Well, depending if you're married or not. Yeah, yeah. Greece has a program that's more tied to whether you buy real estate or not. Switzerland, obviously, each canton is much more expensive. Italy basically said, let's do the Switzerland system, but make it easier and a lot less expensive.
Okay.
So you can live in Lake Como or Milan or wherever you want to live, and you just that's what you pay. So obviously, if you make 200 grand, not a great system. If you make a million, it starts to become a good system. Millions becomes a pretty good system.
Is that per year? 125 per year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, Malta, a Cyprus, or even a UK, if you could be like a non-dom, it's more based on what's your cost of living. So the more...
What does non-dom mean? People not familiar with it.
I'm not domiciled in the country. And so I'm going to basically be taxed on a remittance basis. So I'm a tax resident, but I'm taxed on remittances. People mess this up a lot where they're like, well, I'll live in Ireland or I'll live in the US or I'll live in Canada, but I'll put my company in the British Virgin Islands. Well, there's all kinds of permanent establishment, controlled foreign corporation rules, all this thing. Like they figured out, like obviously everyone with an online business can't just put it in the British Virgin Islands and not pay tax while they live in some high tax country. You can't do that. But if you're a non-dom, then you can be a tax resident. And basically it says, well, you have your business overseas. You have your investments overseas. What you bring into the country is what you pay on at normal rates. And so it becomes an arbitrage question. If you spend all of your money that you earn, that's not a very good deal because you're bringing it all in. But if you, you know, make a million and spend 200,000, even if the tax rate on that 200,000 is 50%, I mean, you're still paying 10%. All right, which is, you know, not a bad rate of tax.
Do you have any fears about Ireland in terms of like you've obviously researched extensively, like politically it's fairly stable, but you know, Sinn Féin coming to government, does that bother you?
I suppose there's always a risk. And I can't say, and I think Ireland's a place where I'm learning more about it. No, but Sinn Féin, I don't think we align on many issues. It seems to me, from my little knowledge and increasing knowledge, but it would seem like there could be a case at some point to go the other direction. I mean, when I was growing up, my father said, you know, one day we're going to have a president who's just kind of like a crazy man. And I said, like, but people want someone who's political and they want someone who's like, it's like at some point they're not going to care because they're just going to get bad enough. They're just going to be like, in 2000, I was in school, they elected a pro wrestler as the governor of the state of Minnesota. And it was like, what? Like people were just so fed up. They're like, all right, put the pro wrestler in charge. And obviously 16 years later, it's like, put this guy from a reality show in charge of the country. I don't know. I don't think Ireland is kind of at that same trajectory. People were just kind of throw the bums out mentality. But certainly, you've seen some stuff in the last couple of months that I would imagine at some point. Mm. But I don't want to come and lecture people on what their politics are, what it should be, or what it could be. I don't know that I'm a great prognosticator.
It's interesting from an outsider, inverted commas, perspective, though, to come, because this is obviously what you do for a living. So it's interesting to hear someone's perspective who maybe isn't emotional about Ireland, isn't emotional about like
political. more emotional. Than that, but some places maybe. I mean, like the place, like the people, like a lot of things about it. I think at the end of the day, like everything has a cost. And you know, look at a relationship. You can have a spouse or you know whatever, and you love the person, and you really want to help them. At a certain point, if the spouse is an alcoholic, if the spouse is physically abusive, the spouse whatever, at a certain point, the love isn't enough, and you know, there's boundaries to love. I mean, relationships aren't built entirely on just love. Oh, we love each other. Like, okay, well, you have to have common values and like all these other things, like that, or else you have a relationship that doesn't work. You can't just be blind puppy dog love. And so I think that's why being diversified and knowing where you're going to go is important, because what happens when something, okay, your example, Sinn Féin, if they come in and they start doing a bunch of stuff that you don't agree with, what's your plan? Well, if you're reacting out of like a knee-jerk reaction, I got to do something tomorrow, you're probably going to make the wrong decision. You're probably not going to sew up all the little points. We had a guy come to us. He had a bunch of investments that he'd made rather hastily. I said, do you know if you die, and he was an older guy, you're going to pay like $2.8 million in tax. He's like, I never even heard it. Like, state tax? What are you talking about? I'm like, I'm not a citizen of that country. Yeah, you're going to have to pay $2.8 million because he didn't think it all through. Like, you're going to do something like that. So I think having the multiple passports, or at least one, having the multiple residences helps. If you're Irish, obviously you have all these other countries in Europe you can go to, as well as the UK. And so that could help. I think there'll always be some standout in Europe, but you know, maybe it's just a gradation. Maybe you want to have the place in Latin America. Maybe you want to have the place in Asia. Maybe you want to have the place in the Gulf that is totally different. And so, you know, I think that's the answer, is just having options and hoping for the best. But I mean, if you look at it emotionally, powerlessness is, people get upset because they feel powerless. Anger comes from a lack of power. It's like the definition of anger is it's a lack of feeling in power, right? And then you get angry because, like, I can't do anything to stop it. And, well, how do you do that? You have options. And then it's like, okay. I mean, some people would say if you have a prenup in your relationship, now it doesn't work as well here in Ireland, but if you have a prenup, like, hey, like, I can focus on building the relationship now because I'm not worried about, like, what if I say the wrong thing and she leaves me and takes half my money, or he, you know, whatever. I think it's all about having options and then hoping for the best. I think it's realizing that everything has a price. I'm happy to pay tax. What I'm not happy to do is to have people say, well, you're successful and we've made some bad decisions, so like, why aren't you paying, like, your 50%'s not enough. And where I come from, like, that's the discussion. And it's literally got to the point in the US and Canada, they ask people in polls, yes, we should pay zero and you should pay 60% because we want this next free thing. Cancel our rent. We keep all of our money, you keep none of your money. Really? That's a good system? Like, I don't care how much you like living in the US or Canada, like, that's not a good system.
I think that's a great, great insight, is that never react in anger. And it's a super point about powerlessness as well. Don't wait until it's too late. Don't wait until it's great, great advice for business and entrepreneurs in general, regardless of the financial situation. Don't wait until it's too late to have that plan B. Like, you should always have that other option, especially when it comes to money. Talk to me about crypto. Like, we've had a crypto run 2020 to 2022. What's your thoughts on the whole crypto scene?
You know, I have some Bitcoin and some crypto presence. I mean, we've worked with a lot of those folks over the years. I like what it stands for. I think what I've seen, again, with the friction, this was one of those things that I've seen, the friction as I've traveled around the world, and I've kind of been forced to confront my own beliefs. I think a lot of Americans who have this kind of libertarian perspective, I think I'm still very much libertarian, but I think that you realize maybe there's a few guardrails to that as you go around. I mean, you pay just as much tax in the US as you do in many European countries. You don't get healthcare for it. Not that the healthcare in all these European countries is great, but, like, okay, then lower the taxes in the US. Like, why are we paying so much and not getting this stuff? Like, you start to think, hey, free market healthcare system sounds great, but not for 43% all in tax. And I think that, you know, my issue in the crypto thing is you're not going to make it as big as the true believers want if it keeps some of that original total, you know, libertarian nature. Like, people want to, like, be like, oh, I forgot my bank password, I'll just go into the bank branch and they'll reset it for me. Like, not, my money's gone. So, you know, you want the wide adoption. I believe in the wide adoption. Obviously, you know, again, it comes back to, what does the average person think? And I think that it's very important for people like me. I mean, even just entrepreneurs in their own country, but certainly me, with, you know, all over the world, like, to realize there's a certain rareness to who we are and what we do. Like, most people aren't like us. Like, most people, okay, if that's a better way to have money, cool. But, like, what happens if I forget my code? And you know, people want some KYC. I mean, the average person wants that stuff. And so that's why I think that culture is so important. I think that Ireland has people and work ethic and just a whole bunch of things that makes it, for me, a standout in Europe. I wouldn't go to the rest of the countries in Europe because I just think that the culture there is not in line with, like, you know, let's just let people be who they are. And I think that's a great thing about crypto. But I think that over time, the average person doesn't want that. Certainly in the markets where you want people to adopt crypto, in the Western markets, I mean, people, you know, they kind of believe that, like, oh, like, this guy's involved. Oh, he's from Russia. Like, oh, he's a bad guy. Like, you, like, every show, the Russian guy or the Albanian guy, or the Serbian guy is the villain, right? And then you see, like, every bank, like, a lot of banks in the West, like, oh, Albania. Yeah, we don't want Albanians. It's like, oh, really? Like, they're all terrible? Like, we have to get to that mindset, I think. And I think that when you get wider adoption in things like crypto, you're going to have people who want that mindset. They're just going to, it's like people in the US who, they leave California because the taxes are too high and the government has too many regulations. And then they move somewhere new where they don't have that. And then they vote for the same politicians. They're going to do the same things for the same policies that cause them to leave California. Like, I think there's a risk of that happening in crypto.
Okay. So you're semi-bullish.
I'm not a price prognosticator. I mean, I think you shouldn't be. I think if you follow, I mean, look at some of the best investors, Warren Buffett, whatever. I mean, they're not price prognosticators. I like the overall potential. I think that if you're an American and you think the U.S. government's just going to let crypto roll right in and it's going to be, you're nuts. I think you got, if you're into crypto, you should, I wouldn't want to have ties to the U.S. I think that at some point they'll make it very difficult. And what I don't like is the arrogance sometimes, like, well, you know, what are they going to do? Or we put up something the other day where it's like, who pays taxes on crypto? It's like, you know, the people in the government, I don't know. I go back and forth between whether they're stupid or just they don't care and they're inefficient. But, like, they're getting a lot better at figuring out who owns crypto. Like, the average person, like, they're going to know you own crypto. Like, eventually you're going to get in trouble. And I kind of push back in the arrogance of, like, well, they can't stop it or this and that. It's like, yeah, if you live in the U.S. and you want to buy a house one day, you know, you're going to have to take some crypto out. They're going to eventually put the pieces together. And if you didn't pay your taxes, they're going to come after you. And there's going to be certain reporting mechanisms. And there might be certain companies that don't want to take payment in crypto. You know, just, you know, most people are going to follow what the government says. So you want to have a government that's not threatened by that.
Again, it comes back to your point about having multiple options, multiple passports, multiple places where you can go.
Multiple bank accounts you can put your crypto into when you want to go and buy something in the real world, and the person may not take payment in Bitcoin.
So you're in Ireland a year now. What surprised you?
I don't know if I'm surprised by that much after everything. I'm really focused on, you know, how do you feel? And I think overall, I mean, one of the things that people tell us, you know, let's say, again, they're coming from the US or Canada, they want some of those consumer conveniences. It's nice to be back and to have access to some of that stuff. You know, I mean, when you live in Georgia, it's like, oh, I want a shirt. And it's like, yeah, you go to the store and you buy a shirt. And there's kind of a charm about that. Like, I don't like having Alexa in my house listening to everything I'm doing. Like, my wife and I went to some Airbnb or something in Mexico a couple of years ago. It's like, just unplug all those things. But I guess what surprised me is my own, you know, like, just, I've kind of been out of this world of convenience for so many years. I think you're seeing a lot more conveniences in the exotic countries that I've been going to. It speaks to the fact those places are improving. But, you know, being in the EU where you can just order anything you wanted, and I think that's been surprisingly of interest to me, right? Because I kind of said, well, you know, I kind of written that off. I don't know if there's anything in Ireland that surprised me so much. I, you know, I think when you've visited a place for 14 years and you have friends from there and employees from there, I mean, you kind of understand what it is.
So looking ahead to 2024, what areas are you focusing on as areas of opportunity as an entrepreneur?
Well, our business gets a good amount of our leads, and used to be a lot of, used to be almost all of them, from digital marketing, so YouTube and all that. It's obviously easier to copy when you can just go and watch every YouTube video or every blog post. So I think we're doing a lot more offline stuff. And what I'm really focused on that I think it's easy to kind of lose sight of is being a real business. I think digital marketing is the future. I think everyone should be doing it. Have a YouTube channel, have a website, do SEO, have social media. But I think too many people lose sight of it. You know, if it doesn't convert, or if it's not converting the right people, you got to do other stuff. I'm a big believer in going old school. And I think this year is a push for us to go back to doing old school stuff. I remember some of the digital marketers a number of years ago were like, we have a brand new thing, direct mail. It's like, yeah, I was doing that. Like, you know,
messages.
Well, no, I mean, like, you know, cold calling, like, you know, I mean, how many young entrepreneurs now are like, sales is dirty. I'm focusing kind of going more old school. We're doing more pushes into some of these other markets. It's very interesting to see, like, obviously our standards for compliance are very high. There's a lot of people in my industry, the offshore industry, that are very scummy and slimy, and I guess they'll take anybody. But for us, like, we don't want to take anybody doing things untoward. And so we've seen in some of the South American countries, there's been a bit more pushback on doing things the right way. And that's been kind of difficult for us to take some of those clients. But we want to kind of work on that. Age has been good for us. I think for me, for a long time, I looked at my business as, hey, I'm this, you know, guy from the US who traveled and does all this stuff, and people from the US or very similar countries will see that and they'll want to do it. And I think the progression into a more substantial business is, okay, that's a great backstory, but like, we don't have to focus on that as like the whole story. Like, let's just focus on here's what you get and go and talk to even higher level clients offline and more referrals and just, you know, more of that. I think it's easy to get caught up in your own echo chamber.
Yeah.
And that could apply to a country, or that could apply to a marketing philosophy. Like, hey, we're number one on YouTube. But it's like, okay, like, are you number one over here?
And so, what does that mean? This is a great point. What does that mean for your business? Just because you're wedded to something and it's been working, but what does that mean going forward? And every business should evolve, right? Every business should become something different. Like, you're evolving into, I find it interesting going offline as well. I think that people really want to connect offline as well. Online's great. It's great to do Zoom interviews, it's great to do meetings, but like, nothing beats this. Nothing beats sitting across from you.
I agree. There's a part of me that, I was in Geneva a couple months ago and I saw like the law firm, like the beautiful brass plate at the door. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. That's not really me. I would never, no matter how much money I have, I would never hire that firm. Like, we talked about the big four. Like, I would never think, just kind of my character, like, that I'm at the level where I should hire Deloitte. I'm sure there's people with much less money than I have that are like, of course I'm calling Deloitte and they're going to love me and they're going to beg for my business. I've never been that guy. And so my business is built around this kind of scrappy entrepreneurial philosophy. But I think that, you know, sometimes you have to get out of your own head to put your ego aside. Like, we have this better way of doing it. It's YouTube. And listen, there's things that people do that work for a reason. And you can say that about any year, but this year in particular, it's about more geographical diversification. If all your clients are coming from Ireland, that's a problem. I mean, you're wholly at the whim of what happens in Ireland, right? I mean, we get a lot of people from different countries during certain events. That's powerlessness, right? I mean, to use the word powerless, you're just waiting for certain events to happen in certain countries. Like, I don't want to be like hoping a certain US candidate wins so I get more business, like when I can just go and find more business somewhere else.
Don't wait to crash your car to ring the insurance company.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to do a quick fire round. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur should read?
The Culture Map is a great book if you want to learn about different cultures. Patrick Bet David's books, we mentioned him. Good kind of reads to kind of get of entrepreneurial clarity. The new one is Choose Your Enemies Wisely, and the next one is Your Next Five Moves. But probably the most impactful book for me as an international entrepreneur was The Culture Map.
Culture Map.
By Aaron Meyer.
Great. It's first from recommendation as well. What's something you had to learn the hard way?
Everything. when you're international, I mean, just everything. Every aspect of compliance. I think what I've learned is you really need a great team of, Alex Hormozi is the framework of one person to sell, market and sell. It's probably my main strength. One person to deliver the product and one person to keep them both out of jail. And obviously he's kind of being a bit exaggerative there, but I think having that good support team of people to make sure things are well managed, learning the hard way of, I mean, we have such a more robust and structure now, you know, corporate banking, all that, just because we have people who, they love managing that stuff. Whereas if you put me in charge of that, I like setting it up. I hate managing it. And then it's just not as robust. I think probably a lot of entrepreneurs underestimate as you grow, having some of that kind of the boring stuff.
Well, know your strengths and hire your weakness, right?
For sure.
What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
I question myself whether I've sacrificed anything. I think that maybe the misery and the stress was the goal. I think a lot of entrepreneurs are probably like that. Like, you'd be miserable not being miserable.
You said something beautiful and it stuck with me. It's probably what I'm going to take away from this is you need friction to build self-awareness. I really do believe that. And I'd never heard someone phrase it like that, but I think people say the journey is the goal. People say, you know, I learned a lot along the journey. But I think that's really interesting, the friction.
If there's one thing I would credit myself for, and I often don't, I would say great self-awareness is an incredibly powerful thing. And I think a willingness to accept things where it's like, yeah, sometimes I'm not that good at this, or I'm not the nicest person in this area. And it's like, but yet, okay, how do I solve that then?
It's exceptionally rare. I meet a lot of people, interview a lot of people. Great self-awareness is
that's the most frustrating thing. And you say, what's the surprise? The most surprisingly frustrating thing in my life in the last 5 years is then going out and gaining the self-awareness and thinking like, oh, well, I learned it the hard way. I bet everyone else just already had it. It's like, no, they didn't have it and they don't have it.
What would you do today if I gave you 10 million euro?
Nothing different. Today? Like, what would I do today?
If I give you 10 million euro today, what are we doing?
All right, so here's my philosophy. Like, when you have a big event that moves the needle, not sustainably, like, okay, every year I make 2 million, next year I make 3 million, next year I make 5 million. To me, that doesn't change my philosophy on life. It's just kind of gradual. And eventually, when it's gradual, like, you come back a few years later, like, oh, okay, I was making 2, now I'm making 10. If someone gets a big chunk of money, for me, I guess I'm like, I'd be like, can I spend 1, 2, 3% of that? What would I do? I don't desire to be on a yacht or something. Would I take a trip? I've taken all the trips. I mean, I don't know what I would do any differently, quite frankly. I think, like, if someone says, oh, I made $10 million a year and I sold a business for $100 million, they should go out and spend, and they're going to go out and spend some chunk of that, because it's a whole new strata very quickly. And so 10 million euros, depending on how much of a difference that is to your kind of overall liquid net worth, I guess depends how much of that, you know, you spend. There's different numbers. Now, this is the lightning round, but I'll give you my quick thought. I've heard from Kevin O'Leary and all different people, different numbers from $5 to $20 million. I think if you get to $30 million, 30 million euros if you want, I don't know that there's that much difference. I've heard from some very high-level bankers and clients that I've had where 100 million is absolutely, after that, it's all for fun. So I guess, I mean, the question is, in the frame of your question is, you know, how do I get to one of those levels that makes me feel comfortable to where the 10 million makes no difference at all? Mm. For me, I don't know what I would change. I wouldn't go buy a yacht or something. I could go buy a Bentley or something, but I already have the debate of, should I go buy a Bentley? It's like, okay, well, I can't drive here. So now there's a struggle of like, who do I get to drive me and where do I find that guy? And like, I don't think 10 million euros makes that an easier proposition.
You don't drive?
I'm not a big fan of driving. I mean, here, you know, it's very difficult to get a driver's license here. I'm used to driving at the other side of the road. I haven't really driven in a long time. It sounds like a laborious proposition to get an Irish driver's license. And by the way, listen, I like to go to the pub. I like to go out for a dinner. I obviously wouldn't drink and drive. And so, you know, the idea of having someone drive me, it just seems like, ugh, that's a chat. Where do I find this guy? How do I keep it? It seems like a whole new challenge to solve that I'm not really in the mood to solve today.
In the simplification business.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
What's something in your daily routine you wish had started sooner?
I have to say, I'm not a big routine guy. I guess I do have a certain routine. I do certain things. Maybe the things in my routine aren't that good. I get too many hot chocolates at Butler's. That's a daily routine. I'm really not a routine guy, honestly. Okay. I like when people, and this is a friction thing in different cultures. I don't like the meetings on the calendar. Let's just know what we're doing and let's just talk about it. I'm like, from 4 to 5, we're talking. I hate it.
Okay. Flexibility.
I like having a wide open calendar.
If I give you 1 million euro today and you'd invest in one person or company, who would that be?
I wish I had a way to invest it back into my company. That's the struggle in my company. It's a great question. Well, I'll give you the answer from my kind of perspective. If it's just an extra €1 million, I would find a boring, you know, Singaporean bank to put €1 million in, collect €50,000 a year. And maybe that pays my driver. Maybe I'm getting close to paying the driver now. I'll give the philosophy on this. I have a dividend portfolio and I'm finalizing it this year. And I have a, you know, fixed income portfolio that just pays me whatever, like that's how much I need to live and live nicely. Beyond that, I say to myself, I'm not an investor. I do invest, but I think we're all either entrepreneurs or investors. I met a friend recently. He's a great investor. He's not the best entrepreneur, but he's a great investor. So he's like, why aren't you in growth stocks? Why aren't you in this? Why that? I don't like the volatility. I understand, to your point earlier, of the volatility in my own business. And so he wants to buy growth stocks. You are your own best growth stock. But if you have a cash flow business, I think you struggle to figure out how to reinvest, you know, profits, because it's just cash flow. You put more money in it, it either fails or it works well, and then you have more cash to redeploy. So I think for me, being more of the entrepreneur, believing in my own business as the growth stock, any money you give me is probably going to something relatively stable, because I don't know that my business needs more money. It just needs more of the right people and processes.
Okay. If you'd start a new company in the morning that wasn't related to what you're doing, what would it be?
I have this great desire and this dream of simplicity. I joked a year ago, I think it's difficult now with the hiring challenges, of just running a chimney sweep company, you know, doing a roll up of all the chimney sweep companies around Ireland. Or, you know, many years ago, I couldn't find someone to clean my swimming pool. So I bought a tiny little swimming pool cleaning company in Arizona in the US, sold it about a year and a half later. We built it up. There's a romance for me to doing something simple. And as I mentioned earlier, I think that sometimes, like, no one's business is different. We all want to think our business is different and the rules don't apply to us and no advice applies to my special business. But I do think my business is overly complicated. And maybe I overcomplicate it because I geek out on the process. And I say I wouldn't sell my business because I would still have the same interests in collecting weird passports, but I wouldn't be anybody of notoriety or have the access to the people to help me do it. But I think that also works against you in the sense of, like, you know, I think there's a lack of simplicity when you really enjoy what you do. And I think if I had to start something over, I would say, what do I maybe not enjoy, but I enjoy the business of running it.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy swimming pools, but I enjoyed acquiring other swimming pool companies and putting them together and marketing and doing that.
It was very binary. It was what it was.
Yeah.
What do you believe other people would find strange or strongly disagree with?
Probably a lot. Probably most of the ethos. And that's what I like about the exotic countries is in Eastern Europe, they're like, yeah, of course you shouldn't pay taxes. You should pay as little as possible. These people are all criminals. So in the Western world, and that's not a very common, you know, thought process. I'll tell you what growth for me is not really paying too much attention and accepting myself, and not because other people accept me, but accepting myself because I realize I'm an ethical person. I believe in myself. And what I'm doing is right. So I think probably most people don't understand. Like you said, oh, you're moving to Ireland. I mean, I'm here in Ireland, but have I moved in the typical context of moving? I mean, not really. I'm kind of trying to, I think that at a certain point with what I do, the delta becomes big enough that you kind of can't pay attention to that.
What's one thing in your life you spend money on that brings you immense happiness?
Maybe those Butler's hot chocolates. Probably, maybe a stress relief. I'm realizing with the connecting with the body, you realize someone does something stupid, you want to go and get that comfort food. But I think it probably is the simple things.
Simple things, yeah.
Yeah. What everybody says to that, all the rich guys say to that answer is, and I did it a couple times recently, is the private plane. It brings you a certain happiness, I guess. I haven't done it at a great scale. And maybe that's the one thing that Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and all these guys talk about. It's the one thing they splurge on. Maybe that's, I mean, it was nice, but I don't know if it's better than Butler's hot chocolate.
That's the quote of the whole interview. Flying private isn't better than Butler's. And we are not sponsored by Butler's, we're ready.
Here in Ireland, maybe for my own just interest, if I'd invest €1 million in a company, I love that Drumshambo. They've become bigger.
Drumshambo gin?
Well, they have everything now. Yeah. that was the kind of company I would have loved to get involved in. And I think butlers, like if it was more of like a labor of love, that yeah. those two, or in Singapore, I bring from Malaysia teas from TWGT. They make the best like couture tea blends. They're not cheap, but they're like, everyone loves these teas. I would want to be involved in one of those three companies. Are they the absolute best companies to put €1 million into? I don't know, but I like that idea.
Butler's
and I think there's room to grow for all of them.
Butler's and Drumshambo are going to be delighted for the shout out. Finally, what's your one piece of advice for every founder listening?
We haven't mentioned the five magic words, actually. I'm surprised we haven't done that. Go where you're treated best. And people think it's about tax, and it is. I mean, obviously corporate tax here isn't that bad, but when you want to take the money out yourself, it is bad. Go where you're treated best. My father gave me that permission slip when I was 12 years old. His thing was, because he believed the U.S. wouldn't be the best place to be when I was an adult, he said, don't think you have to stick around for us. I've inspired him. He lives half the year in Mexico. He says, if the U.S. gets worse, I'll just spend the whole year in Mexico. I have my plan ready.
Good for him.
He's like, the U.S. is getting worse and worse. So he found, you know, he likes some of my other places, Malaysia, for example, but he bought a place in Mexico and he said, now I can scale it up or down as much as I want to. And I feel comfortable here. And by the way, I mean, to the point, people have this negative connotation on Mexico. Where he lives, it's fine. And they leave him alone. And it really is hard to believe. Like, they don't bother you there, you know? So he gave me that permission slip, go where you're treated best. And it was, you're not here to serve your parents. And I liked it because I had a lot of friends who their parents were like, well, when we get old, you're going to be responsible for taking care of us. Like, well, I didn't choose to be born, like, you know. And I think that people should look at that. If you're not treated best in a corporation setting or in a tax setting, if you're not treated best in a personal relationship, the idea that we're all born in a place where everything, like, everything's the best, really? Like, the women or the men that you meet in your town are, like, that's the best people who totally understand, like, really? I find it ridiculous. Like, you know, there's people with different values all over the world. Like, there's probably somewhere better you can go. So go where you're treated best in any context. Go where the clients are best. Go where whatever. And what's best, what people have a hard time understanding is I talk about things that I do. If you like Thailand rather than Malaysia or Dubai or Puerto Rico, we help our clients. I mean, we've helped people move to like 32 different countries. I don't live in all those 32 countries, but what's best for everyone else. I mean, for me, this process of human introspection is what dictates where you can go, where you're treated best. And that's the process to push play on, is challenging the dogma. And once that's down the track, it just goes.
Beautiful. Andrew, where can people learn more about you and Nomad Capital?
So nomadcapitalist.com with the IST at the end, nomadcapitalist.com. You can learn about the business. We have an annual event called Nomad Capitalist Live. It's in Kuala Lumpur this year, which I think is the best value place. I mean, a 5-star hotel for like $100 a night.
Wow.
With breakfast and with snacks and character, and they're playing old-timey music, and it's great. So that's our event, and we've got...
When's that coming up?
September 25th through 28th. We've got some people you might like, some people you might not like. Nigel Farage is one of our speakers. People, the Americans like Nigel Farage. YouTube, we put out a video every other day. I wrote the book called Nomad Capitalist, available on Amazon, big green cover. We do some of the stuff, I mean... Probably did a little too much at some point, but you can find us in a lot of places.
Easy to find us. Brilliant. Andrew, thanks so much for the chat.
My pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.